A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Back in our respective TMO shipping containers at a socially acceptable distance in the Sunday evening sunshine of South Manchester and Cheshire in Phil's case. How are you doing, Phil?
Hello, Tim.
Bit nippy today. You've got your Edinburgh Northern hoodie on again.
I do, yeah. After a few days of just wearing shorts and T-shirts, I'm back in some slightly more wintry clothes because it's a bit nippy today.
JB, so, did you have your Sam Burgess vest out at any point in the last few days?
No, I'll tell you what I've been wearing recently for my garden workouts. My Japan vest, which ooh, I've got. So I can't buy a Sam Burgess vest. It's gone missing. I tend to save my Sail Sharks vest for special occasions now. they're so infrequent, the special occasions. I mean, I'm not even sure what a special occasion is now.
Tim, you're wearing a lovely Bath rugby top.
Oh, a beautiful Bath jersey. Well, that's because for tomorrow, I'm going to keep it on until tomorrow when we do our other pod about Bath v Wigan, the Cross of the Codes podcast.
I might get my Sam Burgess vest for that one.
Yes.
Excellent. Is. Annoying.
That is annoying. You had a good week. How are you doing?
They all seem to merge into one, though. It's not really... I think it's finally catching up with me. I finally ran out of stuff to do.
Have you painted all your Warhammer?
No, I've not painted any Warhammer. Did a bit of I've kind of slowed down on the trip. I've done a little bit more working on it, not too much. I got a 24 kg kettlebell and the 28 kg kettlebell, and my Metcons arrived, which means I'm automatically fitter.
Yeah, at least 20% fitter.
Yeah.
Nothing interesting. Work is actually very busy, which is very, very good because it's keeping me occupied most of the time. My only interesting bit of fitness this week was I ran a PB for 5K at 20 minutes and 2 seconds.
That's awesome, Phil. That's annoyingly close to sub 20, though.
Yeah, annoyingly. So I've set myself a goal before my next birthday, which is in 2 weeks' time, of running sub 20 5K. And I failed by 2 seconds, which is incredibly annoying.
Wanted it just a little bit more.
Well, if I'd have just run slightly 2 seconds faster.
I'm dubious about my Garmin watch measuring the distance I cover accurately. Maybe it made you run 10 metres too far and you actually beat it.
Well, my Garmin actually recorded me as slightly slower than Strava did. So I'm taking the Strava time, which was about
four seconds.
It was 4 seconds faster than the Garmin time.
Good.
If I make it under 20, I will trust whatever records that says that I've done it.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, so my little brother somehow runs 5K in about 19...
Under 19. 18.
That's outrageous.
That's very, very fast for a non-runner.
What does he do in like 18 something, is it?
I think he set a PB this week of 18:50, something like that.
I bet he posted it on social media. It didn't happen if he didn't post it on social media.
I didn't even know it was that he did it until Phil told me.
Phil might actually tweet just purely to make that real.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, rugby-wise, we've got plenty to talk about on this podcast. Go on, JB. You were looking at our running order and going, don't care about that, don't care about that. So pick something you do really care about.
Well, let's keep it to actual professional rugby for now. Leicester Tigers is very interesting.
It is interesting. Some big shifts at Leicester Tigers. So the headlines they've announced this week, we knew some of them, but they've announced the full range of players who are departing their squad. which totals 21 players, alongside just the 22 who left last season as well. So that's 43 players turned over in 2 years. Some good, some bad. It's a bit of a mixed bag, which is, I guess, to be expected with the Leicester squad. There's some handy players leaving, but most of them, you'll say, it doesn't really matter. And alongside that, just to give the high-level thing, they've also announced some coaching changes this week, which are quite interesting. So we already knew Jordan Murphy was getting a promotion for all the good work he's done.
All the good work. No end of good work there, is there?
For all his good work. He prevented relegation for 2 seasons on the bounce. So well done. So he's gone to director of rugby.
One technically he avoided relegation.
Well, you know, he might have been lobbying to get Saracens relegated. I mean, We don't know how involved he was there.
He could have compiled a dossier himself and handed it to the Premier Rugby.
Jordan Murphy snooping around the offices of Saracens.
So Murphy goes to the top role, DOR. Borthwick comes in as head coach. Mike Ford has moved from, I think he was doing attack and defence. He's now just going to focus on defence. And they've brought in a chap called Rob Taylor, who is the attack coach at Sydney University, who have won the Shoot Shield, I think it is, but a Australian domestic competition for 4 seasons on the bounce. He seems like an interesting appointment, although I don't know much about him. And a bigger name, or certainly his last role was a bigger role, Aled Walters comes in as strength and conditioning coach, who famously got the Springboks prepared to win a World Cup and in the shape of their lives, so much so that many people on social media were suggesting that they're all on drugs.
Yeah, so I'm going to tell you something embarrassing here. I did not know the first thing about Mr. Walters. Never heard of him before, looked him up, spoke to many people who I trust in the game and whose opinion I respect, and it seems to be unanimous. They all think he's bloody brilliant.
Yeah, he's got good write-ups, and he's been around as well. So he's been Scarlets, Brumbies, Taranaki in New Zealand, Munster, and then South Africa. So
that's a CV.
It's a great CV, and experience in different environments. So that looks like, I mean, in terms of the strength and conditioning side, winning the World Cup with South Africa, there can't be many better roles. So this guy has got an incredible CV for strength and conditioning coaches.
He'll be doing some Zoom fitness classes at the minute.
Yeah. So just on that, I mean, all the other roles I'm more impressed with than the South African role. How much extra strength do the South Africans need?
Think about the conditions that they were playing in. So over 30 degrees, pretty much every single game, and 80%+ humidity. So to get a team ready for that, I mean, not that Leicester are going to be training or playing in those conditions very often, but the challenges that South Africa faced, and every team, and particularly South Africa actually, because they're such a big team, such a heavy team, to play and continue performance in those conditions is huge. So I think it really is a very good appointment. And there would be other clubs and probably nations looking for his signature.
The 43 people that you listed in the last 2 years that have left Leicester Tigers is a pretty damning number. It's a damning reflection on the recruitment of the years since Richard Cockerell left the helm. And then when you look at it, when you dig into it a little bit, and you also go, they've recruited tons of players which hasn't worked and haven't been of the necessary quality. And in that period, they've hardly brought any academy players through. And bearing in mind we're talking about financial sustainability of rugby, I'm absolutely certain that is their focus, has been their focus for the last few years, and for any club must be the number one focus.
Yeah, if it gels, they've got a very, very good coaching setup. If you just said all those names and then you added the name Jordan Murphy in and didn't know anything else about him and anything else about his coaches, and you said, which one do you think is director of rugby? You probably would have gone Mike Ford, Borthwick. You would have gone Jordan Murphy.
In my head, it's clearly not worked with Jordan Murphy as head coach. The last couple of seasons have, by Leicester Tigers standards, been disastrous. Yeah. But they obviously rate him and they obviously like him. And I like him. When I listen to him talk, I like him. He comes across as honest, comes across as intelligent, and he comes across as a proper rugby man and a proper Leicester man. And so they must see something in him which has given them the confidence to promote him. And the position of DOR in my head is very different from the position of head coach. It's far less hands-on. It's far more business-orientated. It's far more strategic. And maybe this is the perfect fit. Maybe that's great for Jordan Murphy. And having someone like Borthwick, who is clearly a talented coach and has done numerous different roles across the world with general success, maybe this is just what they need.
I'm going to just make a completely unsubstantiated claim here. Are you ready for this? Part of me wonders if Leicester Tigers are being a little bit smart here. They're trying to make a bet. And I wonder if they're trying to slim down their squad, worried about the future of the league. And I wonder if they think maybe they're going to come back to rugby and instead of having a 12-team league, it's going to be a 10-team league. So let's get rid of the people that we want to now. And hey, if it's a 10-team league, we've got the squad in place and we're in good shape. If it's not, well, we can recruit a bit more later. And I think there might be an element of them sort of hedging their bets and being a bit prudent.
With the thought that potentially two teams could fold or drop out of the league.
Yeah, like Newcastle, like Worcester, like Wasps. All three, I believe, are basically pretty precarious.
Even if that weren't the case, even if you were definitely going to have 12 teams, with what's going on in New Zealand, South Africa, Australia, with their teams and the precarious financial state there, I'd keep hold of your shekels and spend them and you'll get more value out of them later.
Yeah, so get rid of everyone. Yeah,
pick up a few blacks, pick up a few Springboks. The other side of it, which kind of matches those two things, is there's talk, and there has been talk for the last few weeks, of either a potential reduction in the salary cap or a potential removal of the marquee players, which was brought up in the rugby paper. And either or both of those things, or a shift in that direction, could also aligned to having a smaller, more streamlined squad.
Yeah, I actually am in favour of getting rid of the marquee players. I mean, I see why they're there. I'm happy that they are there. I'm also not bothered if they go. I'm far more comfortable with removing the marquee players than reducing the salary.
So the marquee players, I think as an England fan, I'm a fan of the league and I'm an England fan. I do worry that you'd get more people being forced to make the choice that someone like Carl Ferns had to make. And Carl Ferns has not played for England for the last 4 or 5 years when he probably, certainly at some point, would have been picked because he was playing in France, because he took the money. And there's been fewer people have had to weigh up that decision. And that benefits England, but it does also benefit the league.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to be a problem, actually, getting rid of the marquee players, because, in fact, I think now is the time to do it. I've had a lot of thoughts around the future of rugby, particularly after COVID. And I can only come to the conclusion that rugby is going to go down the same route that football is. It tends to polarise around a couple of leagues just because of the economic pull. I think that the Premiership can afford to get rid of the marquee spaces and basically just fight it out with France for whoever they want, though.
Maybe.
And that's the future. I think the future is going to be basically these two big leagues, and that's it.
Watch this space.
Watch this space.
I'll tell you what, let's stay with the Premiership for a minute, and Saracens breaching the rules this time with five players. Who were the guys? Nick Ezekwe, Billy Vunipola, Sean Maitland,
Good.
Great mates, Alex Good.
And Josh, I'll get his name wrong, but
Ibwanopke.
Yes, he's the prop, isn't he?
Young prop. So what were they doing? They were having coffee,
wandering around St Albans, from what I saw. It just sounds a bit dull. As in, they know the rules. Whether it's your opinion that it's reasonable or responsible or whatever else, they know the rules and. It's not as if you can miss them.
They're, yeah, exactly. That'd be my
five massive blokes who are in the town where they are pretty much most famous, wandering around. Just be a bit smarter, lads.
Yeah, it's not like they were hiding. It'd obviously be better if they're hiding in the back room of a bar or something. But they were in a park. looking massive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just a bit dull. Fair enough. They seem to have apologised. No harm done kind of thing. Just be a bit smarter, yeah. Lads.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's just, in a way, I feel sorry for, well, no, not even in a way. I genuinely feel sorry for all the people at Saracens who work really hard, have the best of intentions and have done nothing wrong, because the reputation of that club just...
Yeah, it does show the human side, which is they're probably pretty bored at home. Yeah, let's just go. It's nice and sunny. Go for a coffee. It's pretty much understood. You're going to be okay outside. I guess it's against the rules. No one's harmed. Everyone move on. But the reaction to it, because it's Saracens, is very much like, oh, cheating again, are we? Yeah.
If anyone was going to do it, it had to be Saracens.
But yeah, there you go. Elsewhere, other news this week, and how soon is it going to be before we see England's next kit? The Stash Watch, Umbro, Canterbury have had their last involvement with England rugby.
Good.
They're not going to suit up another England team for the foreseeable.
Yeah,
I think it's good to have a change. I thought the Canterbury brand was getting a bit stale, actually. So, yeah, fine, they can go. Unless he sponsored the Lions and sent us some new shirts.
I was going to say, is it the Canterbury brand getting stale, or the freebies, the boxes of stuff we got sent, getting less and less frequent?
To be honest, since they stopped sending us free boxes, a lot of love has been lost here. I don't mind saying it. Look, I'm fairly neutral on these things, but I can be less neutral if you send me boxes of stash.
I thought you were always neutral, JB.
I am always neutral. I think Umbro is going to be pretty cool. I'm looking forward to it.
I'm actually... There's a lot of people almost being a bit snobby with this. So Umbro, as far as I'm aware, I've not seen a rugby kit for 15-plus years, probably 20 years. Technology, as we well know, has moved on a lot in the last 20 years. So I'm although Umbro wouldn't be my go-to brand for sportswear, I'm cautiously optimistic that they'll do something a little bit fun, a little bit different.
The fact they've not been involved in rugby for a reasonably long time. I think they might do a couple of rugby league kits currently, but anyway.
Do they do the Great Britain one?
No, that's
back in the day when they were talking about the call board.
Yeah. They did do it before. Whoever does the current Great Britain Rugby League kit is probably my favourite kit of any kit in any sport at the moment.
Oh no, someone weird does that.
Dacia? No, or is that the sponsor?
Dacia's the sponsor.
That's the sponsor.
They make the cars.
It's not Umbro, it's not Umbro.
No.
It's on the tip of my tongue. It's a bloody cool shirt though. You're all right.
It's awesome.
It's an awesome shirt.
It's like the perfect balance between like retro but also slightly modern. Yeah. It's like a slightly modern take on a retro shirt. It's really cool.
Agreed.
I mean, ultimately, who are we trying to kid here? All these sports tops are probably made in the same sweatshop in East Asia somewhere and then rebadged appropriately. So I really don't care what the badge is. The last time Umbro really came across my radar was when they were fitting out the England football team under Fabio Capello. And I seem to remember Fabio Capello and Umbro took the players to a tailor to get the shirts fitted for them properly. I'm into that. I'm so into that. I find it hard to explain how into that I am. And if they take that approach for rugby, I'm all for it. I'm 100% in.
So I quite like... We saw... Was it Underhill? And was it Underhill and Curry?
Tom Curry. Yeah.
But that can't be true, can it? Because they can't be together.
Yeah, they shouldn't be together. But anyway, there was a tweet of a kit that could, in my head, that could only possibly be a training kit.
It has to be a training kit. It was disgusting.
So I didn't mind it as a training kit. I would hate it if that was the real kit. But as a training kits are supposed to be a bit different. So I've got no issue with
disgusting.
Yeah, I could actually actively enjoy it.
No, that Sam Burgess vest that you can't find is a thing of beauty.
And that is a thing of beauty, true. But yeah, most of the singlets are very, very nice. Some of the training kits, though, are horrendous. So that doesn't bother me too much. Look, England wear a white shirt. You have to be monumentally bad at your job to mess up a white shirt. It has been done. But the test will be, how bad is the alternative shirt? What ridiculous colour will England be wearing? Will it be purple? Will it be sunset orange? What will it be? That'll be the test. The home kit will be fine.
You're right. Well, apparently there's one thing that Umbro, because they've not done a great deal of rugby, and like you say, that the material has to be able to withstand a lot of going over. I think that's the one thing that's the question mark, is have they got it right that they're going to be able to make a shirt that will last? But no, in terms of design, I hope they don't come in thinking we need to make an impact. No, it's a white shirt with a red rose. That's it.
Urban spray paint fonts.
Oh no. Yeah, keep it simple, guys. Go do what you want with the training kit. Make that as funky and urban as you want.
It needs to appeal to everybody. Come on, guys.
One of the most incredible things about this announcement was, so Umbro, I thought they were owned by Nike, and they were owned by Nike until 2017 when they were bought by Iconics. Iconics Brand Group.
So what do they own? Because I bet it's all sorts of stuff.
They do own a few different brands, including Umbro, including Lee Cooper, cheap jean and check shirt company that you can get from Sports Direct.
Outlet shops, basically.
Yes, outlet shops. But they also own Rockaware, which is Jay-Z's streetwear brand. But then Iconics, so Mike Ashley has a 13% stake in Iconics. Well, yeah, so Mike Ashley now has a finger in the England rugby pie, as well as a finger in Jay-Z's urban sportswear brand pie, which it just sounds like a recipe for disaster.
Particularly if Mike Ashley does some cost cutting and says, can't we just use up some of this Jay-Z stuff, put a rose on it, and England's post-match attire, like a Chicago Bulls Michael Jordan suit circa 1997.
Perfect. Those
suits,
we know what we're doing.
Three breasted giant suits. Three or four button suits. Oh, they're outrageous. What? I'm up to episode. I've done four episodes of Last Dance. Have you?
Phil? Amazing. It is absolutely outrageously good. I didn't think it could get any better, and it does.
Phil Jackson's my favourite. You were rightly saying Dennis Rodman. What a character he is. I'd forgotten that he was potting Madonna and Carmen Electra and all of that. Yeah. But
Carmen Electra looks amazing still. amazing.
But that Phil Jackson, he's the most interesting guy out of the lot, I think.
His shoulders.
Yeah, the shape of the man.
His shoulders. they're all fascinating characters, in fairness.
I want to know why Michael Jordan's eyes are yellow, though. I Googled it. Do you know what I Googled? I Googled... why are Michael, and it also filled it, Jordan's eyes yellow?
Oh, really? That's the answer.
And there is no answer. He won't say. He won't give an answer on it. Nor should he if he doesn't want to.
No, absolutely not. I did notice that he had a little glass next to him during the interview that was something that looked like it might be a whiskey.
Oh, definitely a whiskey. Whiskey and cigars, he loves.
Always on the cigars, which I love.
Every time it cut back to him, the whiskey was at a different level.
Yeah.
It wasn't just going down, it was down, then up, then down again. Then up again.
Two quotes which I love from this whole thing. One was, Republicans buy trainers too. I love that quote so much. I mean, that to me just sums up the competitive nature of the man. He just wants to win and sell shoes. Now, I'm not getting involved with anything. Republicans buy sneakers too. What a great saying that. And that's almost inspirational to me. And the other one was, I'm only packing one... Where do you go? Arizona. Yeah, Phoenix. I'm only packing one suit. Now, if you don't get that reference, it's because he had two games there. They only needed to win one of them. And he didn't want to stay for 2 days.
Very good.
I'm loving it at the moment.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah.
So yeah, back to Mike Ashley. Mike Ashley. I don't like him as a person per se, but I do love just the effect he has on, well, particularly Twitter, but like just the wider nation. To know Mike Ashley is involved in the England kit again fills my heart with joy. It's going to be wonderful.
Mike Ashley and Boris Johnson are like a Twitter tag team, aren't they, between them? Make people's veins burst all over the shop, inexplicably.
So, just going back to who owns what, what's the name of that? What's the name of that brand, Phil?
So it's Iconics Brand Group is the group that owns Umbro, Lee Cooper, Rockaware, Massimo, Danskin, London Fog, Mud Jeans, Echo.
Basically, what Phil, what you've just reeled off is a rack at TK Maxx.
But yeah, pretty much TK Maxx or Sports Direct.
Sports Direct.
There's a lot of stuff in there.
Canterbury were owned by somebody brands, and I can't remember exactly what the name was, but I was dealing with one of their people, and that's based out of. It's based out of Blackburn. It's got loads of these massive warehouses in Blackburn. And same situation, which is there's loads and loads of brands like Red or Dead is one. I think it's like one of the big outdoor pursuit brands. And I think what they do is they, if you're a brand, you sell yourself to one of these bigger firms, not because they add anything to your brand in particular, but it gives you all the infrastructure, like the warehousing and this is kind of quite boring now. But you know, the sourcing of materials, all the transport, the infrastructure, that sort of thing. So Canterbury was in exactly the same situation. They were owned by a huge, huge firm that owned several different brands.
And I think even like Nike and Adidas and others are the same, but they're more at the top of the chain rather than one of the sub-brands. So like Nike owned Umbro for a period of time alongside a few others. I think Adidas owned Reebok for a period of time.
They did?
So they're all in similar positions.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm looking forward to the kit. I'm always looking forward to a new kit. Let's just see what they make.
Just on other TV shows and in an update to last week, just what we were mentioning Last Dance, I started watching Last Dance when I finished Better Call Saul. And I am willing to say now I've done all five seasons of Better Call Saul, it's better than Breaking Bad. They're both amazing, but it's better than Breaking Bad.
That is a big call.
Did you talk about this last week?
We did.
I said I think I might think it's better than Breaking Bad, but I'm putting it out there. What? It is better than Breaking Bad.
Wow, that is a big opinion.
At the end, Tim.
No spoilers.
I don't want to give any spoilers away. But I don't think you shouldn't watch it for the reason that you said you wouldn't watch it. That's not to give any spoiler away, because I just don't think that should be a reason you don't watch it, because you're worried about the relationship.
Okay. I will revisit my decision.
Okay. Get on it.
Good. Sam Kane is All Blacks captain. They do like their back row skippers. It feels like, though, they've gone graduating downwards in quality. Not that Sam Kane's not an outstanding guy and player, but Richie McCaw to Kieran Reid to Sam Kane.
Not the same sort of beast, is it?
Yeah, and it's interesting as well, because I think Kieran Reid is one of my all-time favourite back rowers. Yeah, I think he's sensational. But I would actually say the period after he took over probably coincided with him being on the decline. Now, he still had some amazing years in that period, and watching the All Black documentary that we did last week and we recorded the pod on last week, he still put some sensational performances in 2016, 17, 18, 19, but he was probably not at the peak of his powers from, say, 2011 to 2015. Sam Kane, I don't think has ever hit the real highs. I mean, he's a bloody good player, but he never seems to have hit the real highs.
I completely agree. He's always, it comes as no surprise to me that he is captain. It feels like he was destined to be captain from day one.
He was being groomed for it, moulded for it in the McCaw mould. But what one thing that I think Kieran Reid lacked, and I've kind of always thought this, and it was reinforced by the All Blacks documentary, was that leadership presence and the ability to speak and be heard. And perhaps that is something that Sam Cane can bring. And I don't actually know, because I've heard him very, very infrequently. Hopefully he's got that leadership ability.
Yeah, I don't think he's in the same quality. I agree with everything you just said. Feels like he's been groomed for the role he's in. What's the point? Who's he going to captain?
Well, he's not going to captain an autumn tour team. New Zealand have announced, well, they've said for certain, whilst various leagues, like Pro 14, for example, have said, right, we've shifted the plans to resume the league back to August now. They're not writing it off. New Zealand have already said, we're not travelling to the Northern Hemisphere in 2020. Just done, which is going to hit all nations in the pockets big time. To the tune of $20 million to New Zealand, I believe.
Yeah, because New Zealand, they have the highest fee. So they charge the teams for their appearances, which was one of the issues for when Eddie Jones first took... it's issues for all teams, but when Eddie Jones had his run of 19 winning games, but they didn't play New Zealand for like 2 or 3 years during that period, it was because New Zealand were selling their matches to the highest bidder, which over that period was Wales, Ireland, Scotland, France, but not England at that time.
Yeah. So it's going to cost them a lot. And they've also announced that all staff at New Zealand Rugby are now reapplying for half the number of jobs that there were.
How awful. How awful for everyone. It's just, it brings home the tragedy of what's going on. Really, it's just unavoidable. I hope that they're all okay. And I hope if they don't get their job back with New Zealand Rugby, they find alternative employment. But it's just a desperate situation.
And it does highlight the economic impact of COVID-19 is at this point at least as serious as the health impact.
Yeah,
and it is very, very significant.
It could well end up being, again, we don't know how this is going to plan out, but I suspect, you know, we'll look back in a few years' time and say that the economic impact cost far more lives than the health impact.
Potentially.
Just linking this back to rugby, and a particular point I was making at the start, which is I can honestly see this being the time where the leagues reshape. If they are, have I got this right? Are some of the players down to 25% of their salary?
There's definitely, it was either 50 or 60% cuts across the board that were announced by New Zealand a few weeks ago.
If that's the case, you can't blame lads for wanting to pack up and head over to Europe, whether that be France, whether that be here.
There isn't, right now, there isn't many options to do that. Like, long term, you can understand them saying, look, I don't know how long this career is going to be. I can't stay in New Zealand on below my market rate, so I will move. But right now, no one really has the opportunity unless you've got an offer from Japan, say.
No, I mean, Japan is the obvious ones. But, you know, contracts are running down all the time. You know, you only need one club to be interested, and before you know it, you're on a flight. And actually, it doesn't stop at the Premiership. You know, you've got the French League, you've got Pro D2. You know, they will find their way over here, just like the South Africans have. We've got 700-odd South Africans playing across England and France. And I can see the same sort of thing happening. And as those leagues get stronger and stronger, they might take a back seat now, but if they've got as many South Africans as they have, if they've got as many New Zealanders as they have, these countries are rugby mad. They will be tuning in to watch Premiership and Top 14, and it just makes those leagues stronger and stronger. And again, it's a compounding effect. As those leagues attract more revenue, which they will with the influx of talent, they're just going to suck in more and more talent. That's the way it's going to go, and that's why I think it's going to end up basically two games in town, being France and England.
I do appreciate that. I also just would have an element of caution for we should be careful what we wish for there, because what impact, what impact? No, no, I don't wish for it. And I know it sounds harsh because, like you say, I want people to be gainfully employed, but I don't care for watching loads of New Zealanders, one or two of the very best in, from whatever country, wherever they're from. I don't really care. Just a few amazing rugby players, kind of in the Irish model, and then let's make it a great Premiership product that is geared towards an amazing England team that's going to win World Cups.
I think I want to agree with you. I think because what you're saying is technically correct. I should care. But, you know, officially I'm a Welshman. I do not care how many Welsh people are on the field. I even care if I'm watching a Welsh team. I kind of see it a bit more like the NFL model, which is I don't care where you're from. Are you any good? Or are you going to entertain me? I know that the international game is a far bigger draw in rugby union than...
Yeah, and Super Bowl's the pinnacle. Super Bowl's the pinnacle of American football.
Yeah, and I think that's what's going to happen. I think that the major leagues are going to become the pinnacle of the sport.
I still think the international game is so strong and so big that will remain the pinnacle. So certainly for the foreseeable. But I think, Jay, your point, the players will follow the money. And the standard will follow the money. And if the two teams, if it is France and England that in the Premiership that put out the best, most competitive, most compelling product, the TV money will flow there, and then the players will flow there, and those leagues will get stronger and stronger and stronger. But hopefully, Tim, I'm also with you. I am a fan of the Premiership. I'm also a massive England fan, as I said earlier in the pod, and I wouldn't want anything that raise the standard of the English, the Premiership product, if it had a negative effect on the England team.
So mediocre New Zealanders, or South Africans, not interested in World Cup winning superstars, billboards, a TV viewing figure magnets. Get them in.
I had to think about who you were talking about then when you said billboard.
Sonny Bill Williams. Sonny Bill Williams on a massive billboard.
I actually thought he said a name.
He's a younger Kiwi flanker. Billboard.
Yeah, excellent. Billboard. Right, it is what I'm desperate to hear what you think about this. So with the lockdown situation, we don't know exactly what effect it's going to have on the top level rugby, when that will be able to resume and in what form and format and all the rest of it. But it's pretty clear to see that at least at the grassroots level, that people may have to be a little bit more creative about how it's resumed. Like the announcement this week is that sport can take place between members of the same family whilst exercising social distance. So, you know, rugby, even I don't know, rugby training, that doesn't mean you can train, can you? Maybe
well, you can't pass the ball to each other. I don't care.
No, you can't pass the ball to each other, yeah, because there's germs on your fingertips.
You can't scrimmage. You can't have a line out.
Kicking contest.
So the suggestion has been that maybe grassroots rugby should consider games with shorter halves, no contact, no set pieces, a form of touch rugby, just to allow some form of competitive rugby to restart.
Well, if it's going to be touch rugby, you may as well have contact rugby. I mean, I don't know if that stacks up scientifically. That's just my initial thought.
Yeah, well, touch. You might as well, because if you've got a touch, you can't touch from 2 meters away.
Maybe touch with sticks.
2 meter poles.
My only sensible contribution.
Did you see England preparing for the World Cup and they were firing balls at the back three, Johnny May, Watson, Daly, and one of the strength and conditioning coaches had
those swimming pool
noodles.
Oh, yeah, noodles. Yeah.
So if everyone gets a pair of pool noodles, you can play.
In a form of maybe rugby league, you get six attacks, everyone's got pool noodles attached to their arms, and that's how you've got to try and touch it.
But with Velcro on the end, and it's a soft rugby ball.
Yes.
soft felt rugby ball.
Yes.
Now, I'm dubious about the success of that plan. I'm not going to lie.
Well, think of the amount of space that you would need. You need to be playing. If you had 15 players, each with their arms extended by 2 meters, and it's touch, No one's ever going to score a try. But you're going to need to play. You're going to need to play five a side on a cricket pitch in order to create the space.
Frankly, it's a daft idea. I read this. My jaw was getting gradually closer towards the floor. I'm very much of the opinion that if we all want to play, we should play. And I know people say that I am horribly irresponsible.
You don't care about people's lives, JB. You want people to die.
I want all your grandmas dead so I can play rugby. It's a thing which I've been playing for, I don't know how many years now, a long, long time. It's very, very important to me, and I just feel that if we all agree we want to play it, that we should play it. When we're told we can play it. I do not think that some bastardization of the game, something which looks like touch, is worth doing. You may as well go and play a different sport. Go and play a different sport, like, whatever you're allowed to play. The reason I don't think this is realistic is because I can't imagine netball coming back with social distancing. I can't see how you can play any of these sports. So maybe all the invasion sports just stop. In which case, go and do CrossFit until everything reopens. I wouldn't play this. Someone gave me the option of playing non-contact rugby. I'm just not interested. I don't care. Somebody said today, I was reading an article, the Ian McGeegan one. And I really take a big issue with this, because it would be great to practice the core skills of rugby, catching and passing. They're not the core skills of rugby. The core skills of rugby are contact and smashing into each other. I know that's horribly untrending when they run at space, but ultimately, that's not true. The game is about running at each other and creating enormous amounts of contact. That's why it is special.
I totally disagree with you.
You're wrong.
Disagree.
You're absolutely wrong.
It's not an invasion game. It's an evasion game.
Bollocks! How do you evade someone picking and going around the fringes of a ruck?
Well, but evasion could mean, in the context of a rugby game, even at the top level, evasion doesn't mean not being touched. It means running at a weak shoulder rather than running right at the middle of someone.
Look, I don't disagree that there are evasion skills which are very useful. But when Exeter Chiefs go through 27 phases pick and go, they have not evaded anyone. And the reason it's so brutally effective is because it sucks the life out of your opposition. Your core skill is to bully somebody else. That is what it is. It's not catching, it's not passing. It's pick up the ball, because they haven't caught it and they haven't passed it, and run into the opposition and demoralise them. And do you know when they say run at the 10? They don't mean run at the 10 and avoid it. They mean run at the 10. I mean, that is a legitimate strategy. You run at the 10 and you carry on going through that channel until they get tired or they make an error. You embarrass people. You can play it without that, but I won't be there.
Now, weirdly, I'm going to try and pick a line of argument that's somewhere in the middle of your 2 points.
Really, Phil?
with specific reference to the World Cup final last year, actually, which was an unbelievably brutal and physical performance by the South African team. Brutally physical game, which paved the way for some incredible skills for Mapimpi and Cheslin Kolbe to glide in for two tries. So in my mind, it's not one or the other, but you have to have both. You cannot say no passing skills and none of that. And you cannot say there is no place for the physical side. You've got to have both.
I completely agree with that. What I'm suggesting is that the core skills, they've missed out a huge amount of core skills.
Yes, they're all core skills.
And your core skill is, if your whole team just likes catching and passing, that's very, very nice. But I'll very quickly draw up a strategy to beat that.
Well, ironically, with the current situation, I think it's all well and good for Jerry Guscott in the rugby paper, or Sir Ian McGeegan, or who doing it in whatever article you read as well, JB. It's all well and good talking about kind of using this period to upskill, but actually the handling upskilling part is going to be almost impossible to do unless you're able to recreate game situations, which you can't do. Actually, what they should be saying, ironically, as much as you want to have great handling skills and everything, if I was a rugby coach, I would be saying there is no excuse for us not to be like Eddie Jones percentage. Remember when Eddie Jones always says, in the last 2 weeks, we're 30% filler. Basically, that's what players can be. They can be stronger, faster, fitter than ever.
Yeah.
They can do that.
That's exactly right. That's where they're going to have to, you know,
I totally agree with that as well. There are lots of ways that you can stay fit if you are dedicated enough in this period.
I think I go and join a CrossFit gym. I think every time I go, I do it thinking I'm doing this because I can't wait to get back to rugby soon.
Yeah.
And that's how, you know, that would be the motivation for me.
You can make yourself bigger, stronger, faster with no one else around.
Well, just look at that picture of Johnny May hanging on a playground park swing. Oh my God, the shape of that man.
Yeah,
I just reiterate how much I hate the idea? I hate, there's like a rugby snobbery now, and it's like skills are superior to everything else. It's just false. It's just completely wrong. You need everything, and I think this is where the rugby conversation. Do you know all these coaching seminars which are going on now? Yeah. Like everything's doing. Everyone's having a coaching seminar. The point, but you don't really need to log on to them because you know what's going to be said before you even participate. Create a learning environment. Ask open-ended questions. Yada 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 yada. If you run a seminar and the subject is how to bollock your players properly, I'm interested. Tell me something which I don't know, because I've heard reiterations of this newfangled coaching over and over and over again. It is so old now and so boring. Give me something new.
Maybe that's a gap in the market that you could exploit, Jay.
Old
school coaching, how to bollock your players.
Yeah, how do you target a player's insecurity and expose it in front of the group?
That is Eddie Jones. That's an Eddie Jones.
Is Eddie Jones. No one talks about that, do they?
That was, well, we had Gitto last week, and then Ben Youngs was saying this. He was on House of Rugby Pod this week saying how he was undermined and called fat and then given a packet of sweets by Eddie Jones to like tease him and test him. I think the more I hear about Eddie Jones, the more I love it. I think it's absolutely
I do love all that stuff. But if maybe it's because I'm on Twitter and Twitter's not the real world.
It's really not.
It's bloody soft. It's so soft and so biased towards the nice things. And it's not a nice game. It's not always a nice game. Sometimes it's a nice game.
Coming back to the suggestion that rugby could go non-contact, no scrums, lineouts and stuff, I pretty much am where you were at what you said at the very start, JB, which is kind of like, no, if you can play touch, you can play rugby. I don't understand the difference fundamentally.
Yeah. I can't see a difference in terms of virus transmission. So
quite, exactly. Yeah.
Unless you're going to adopt our pool noodle approach.
Yes, which sounds sensible, actually, the more I think about it.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah. Plus, you know, with Boris as Prime Minister, we've seen him in Japan. He likes running over school kids, so he loves the contact. He's not gonna advocate touch rugby over full contact.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Yeah, the other thing as well, which is quite interesting, and it's a side issue, but there was a discussion, or as a review, I should say, about what the amateur game looks like below, not the championship, but the level below that. So you've got the top three
national
tiers.
One.
Yeah, national one, thank you, Tim. And everything else, you know, should it be a pyramid? And I think that's going to be a really interesting review, and that will really affect rugby up and down the country, and for the better, because what they should be doing, as I've said for months now, maybe years, is they should be regionalising it. So I'm part of a league with Toc H called the I'm going to say ADM Premier.
ADL?
Basically, ADL. Yes, that's the one. the ADM. And I think they've got 30-plus teams in this league now. So we're in the top league. There is a pyramid within that structure. Not a pyramid. There's a league structure within that structure. But it's bloody brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. I think a lot of teams would benefit from more regional games.
Well, you're preaching to the converted a little bit, because as much as I used to love, you know, a bus trip back after an away game, you know, the port and cheese on the back seat of the bus from Manchester Rugby Club coming back from Barking or Redruth or somewhere like that. My God, that's a long bloody way when you've got to work.
It is, isn't it?
And especially when players get to an age where they've got families and stuff like that, it's untenable. So yeah,
I would happily have done all that throughout my 20s. Happily, in fact, I wish I had. But I actually also think that having regional rivalries, as I spoke about before, is really important. And having a really high local level of rugby with local, you know, with if we could get a handful of teams from Manchester, which would be National 2, effectively, playing each other, that'd be amazing to watch. I'd watch that.
Yeah, you could get some great standards. The concern I would have would be if you split it like that, the drop-off in standard could be huge.
The reason I don't think it would be, though, is, you know, you just think of this is very inside rugby now, very regional. But, you know, if you think of the big clubs, so-called big clubs around North West, Preston,
Caldy, Files,
Sale.
Sale
FC, Macclesfield.
Throw them all into a league. That's a damn good league. And also, because it's such a good league in its own right, you'll start to get players coming to that league just because it's really good.
Well, the problem is that with those teams, you could create, if it's Northwest, you'd create a 6-team league. And if you extended that to 10 or 12 teams, the drop-off in standard could be huge. And
yeah.
We have seen clubs who've tried to get up to that level, like Chester and Stockport and Oral and Manchester, they were that level and above.
Yeah. Holdy.
Waterloo were that level and above.
Filed, they're still pretty high level, aren't they?
Yeah, but the teams that have done it and then dropped off dropped off enormously.
Yeah, and I guess the other thing is, I say all the names, and we've just said all those names, a lot of them were employing players who had already played there. You know, they weren't all just different squads. They were guys who would... Rosendale too, you know. If Rosendale go down, they all disperse to different teams.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone you played with essentially had been somewhere else before.
So to dovetail it with the conversation you had earlier, where players are going to follow the money. Players are going to follow the money.
And maybe
that's the other thing. They want to get rid of the payments. And there's a really good bit of work by. I think he's a Dutch coach, but then he went to coach Belgium and he did the academy there, which produced Lukaku and all those boys who were excellent. And what he said is, when you add average players to squads with a couple of good players, the squad itself tends to get better and better and better. And if they're not as good technically as those players, they will find workarounds. And I think that's basically what would happen. You would have a core of good players and everyone else would get better around them. You do get better playing with better players.
Yeah, that's definitely true. I do wonder if you're going to take that approach, whether it would be sensible to say, look, no one at a certain level and below, maybe National 1 or Tier 3 or Tier 4, no one gets paid.
I know what you're saying,
hard,
but all,
it'd be too hard to.
You won't be able to do it because all that will happen is there'll be even if there's not brown envelopes, there'll be there you go. You can have that car that we've leased.
Yeah.
Yep.
Beer
tokens, there's jobs, there's all. But the principle is right.
Training on Wednesday nights at the petrol station where they fill up your tank. They'll find a way to pay you.
Yeah.
But what horrifies me is when. They say, oh, we've got a crisis in the game and without the RFU money, how on earth will we survive? We need emergency, this, that, and the other. Well, what are you doing with your money then? Where's it all going? I think that the central funds and the fund, you know, on a club's balance sheet, sorry, not balance sheet, on a club's profit and loss, there shouldn't be any player salaries there. Maybe some coaching salaries coaching payments, but nothing to players. Now, if you're a rich guy and you want to, you know, hand over some of your personal wealth to a player, by all means do so. But your club shouldn't go under because they can't afford to play, can't afford to pay salaries, and they shouldn't be paying RFE money to that extent either. So I think you can kind of come to an agreement with both. If you want to, you know, waste your money, feel free, but don't be spending the RFE money and then, you know, pleading poverty, saying that the sport is unsustainable when it clearly is sustainable. You need to bloody mow a field.
Provide some hot water for the showers.
Yeah, it's not difficult.
Yeah. I don't know. Because until you square that circle, you're still going to get the disparity. Because the best players will go to the clubs that are paying.
Yeah, and also goes to the club which is the best club. Because it's the kudos of playing there.
Yeah.
But at least it levels it out somewhat. And if you can't, you know, if Preston can't get any higher, for instance, and they can't play all of their players, they will naturally dissipate anyway. I think it's a much better idea, personally.
Yeah, I don't mind the idea. And Tim, exactly as you said earlier, as much as a few very long bus journeys a season, when you're boozing with the boys, fancy dress and all the rest of it, are brilliant fun. Doing 15 away trips per season of 4+ hours is a pretty brutal season. Not probably completed a full season, because I was normally injured for about somewhere in the region of 50% of a season.
By the way, the one I used, sorry, go on, Jay. I was going to say the county game becomes very, very exciting then, and so do cup games, national cup games.
Yeah, having a proper national cup below, say, national one level would then be very exciting.
Yeah, that'd be very cool. That'd be very cool. Now, I was just remembering all the things that used to happen on bus journeys. So it used to be power ballads with the music of choice. And because I was like a radio presenter, they used to make me be DJ. And it was all about the 80s power ballads. And in the service stations, you could, if you went for a wee in a service station, you had to do it with your trousers pants around your ankles.
I mean, you would almost certainly be arrested, though.
I think you would be, yeah.
Schoolboy.
You have to do it as a schoolboy, yeah. Different times. Good times.
Very, very different, yes. Yeah.
Simpler times, yeah.
Great fun.
Social media was not a thing, thank God. Yeah. Some of those bus trips, my God. Anyway, what else is there? England are touring the USA and Canada next summer, so it'll be their A team going because it's a Lions tour, obviously. So now we've got the quandary. Do we go to South Africa for the Lions or to America and Canada for the England A team?
What a decision.
Yeah, I mean, we need to tap up our mate that we met out in Japan, Phil, because if that comes good, that would be one hell of a trip. But on the other hand, I want to go to America, so...
America's always good. I didn't actually see if they'd announced where they were going to be playing. Because where the game is...
I guess it's Colorado.
Who knows? But where the game is... depending on where it is, that might entice me more or less in the US.
Yeah. Just remember, David Flatman got one of his caps. How many caps did he get? Two, let's say.
I don't know. More, no,
one of them was in LA.
Five tops, I think. One of them was in LA.
Yeah. Just saying.
LA is very cool.
Isn't it? Just saying. That's all I'm saying.
And other than that, I think we're out of stuff unless I've missed anything.
So two things to mention, just going back and doing some fact checking. Flatman, 8 caps between 2000 and 2002.
Okay.
And the manufacturer of the rugby league kit is Hummel.
That's the one.
Hummel. Yes. Very retro.
Well done.
Other than that, no.
Right, so all that's left to say is that we will be doing a second podcast, which will be coming out tomorrow if you're listening to this on Monday. Otherwise, it could be in your feed right now. So this is why you need to hit subscribe, because there's new episodes coming all the time, even in this lockdown period. We're doing special podcasts, regular podcasts, and the next one will be about the Bath v Wigan Clash of the Codes doubleheader that happened in the 90s.
Hey, are we allowed to do this in person as of next week?
No, not for
no, because we're not members of family, the same household.
But it's not sports, and also it is kind of work.
If we can in
the dungeon, it is work.
If in the dungeon we can keep social distancing, Which might be difficult.
You could do it in we could probably manage it in a back garden.
Let's discuss this offline.
There's going to be a lot of people very upset. But you're right, it's work.
Yeah, it is work.
I would only want to do what's safe and permissible and advised.
Yes, exactly.
Look, I've got unlimited PPE as a spell from the NHS. They don't need it. But that's a use of the podcast. Joking, by the way, that was a joke.
Can I just? That's one thing. I don't know whether your wives are saying this, but my sister's an intensive care unit nurse. She's getting like so annoyed with people. Where she says, I've got no problem with someone having a surgical mask out on the street, but they're doing it so badly. Like basically, you're meant to have a mask on and leave it on, and but people keep touching it, and that actually makes it more of a health threat than wearing no mask at all.
Well, I would know because I just wear a welder's mask.
Nice.
Or an old school hockey goaltender's mask. I find that as particularly on kids. I find it very approachable.
Well, I've noticed one of those. One of the things that your wives will probably wear is that like plastic visor thing.
Yes.
Which sort of reminds me, I want to go to a toy shop and get one of those old police helmets with the plastic visor in front. Go to the supermarket and one of them.
Reminds me of, there's more than one way to skin a cat with social distancing. And I think the guy that probably nailed this, he didn't even realise that he was nailing it, was Larry David with his MAGA hat. I might get myself a MAGA hat now because, you'd automatically create lots of space around you.
Genius.
Excellent. Let's leave it there.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.